Blog Talk Radio.
Some friends you gain, some you lose. In the back of your mind, you're looking for love, but found the blues. That's why I've come from far away, to take away the blues. And I've come to say, I wanna be.
Good morning, and welcome to the New Day Show. I am your host, the Queen of the Empowered Soul, and I'm so excited to have you join us this morning. I want to welcome our guest, Miss Holly Hines, better known as Coach, and she has been hanging out just patiently waiting to get into conversation. So I want to say welcome to you, Holly.
Thank you. Good morning to you.
Good morning, and I just want to do a tack of housekeeping, and then we will get into our conversation. I want to remind the listeners that the call-in number is 646-915-8166. Again, 646-915-8166. And as I was discussing with Holly while we were waiting, I'm waiting to get my chat room up because I'm having a slight technical difficulty. So just bear with me. If you're in the chat room, I will eventually get it up and able to see you. So because I cannot see you now, if you're there in the chat room, I want to go ahead and welcome you and thank you once again for wanting to spend this time with us. In the second episode of today's show, we will have Arlene and Ricky Tedford, and they are the founders and CEO of the Fan Club International, and that conversation will be another interesting conversation. So I'm praying that you will join us for both episodes. So that's just my little housekeeping for now. So, Holly, good morning again, and thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
You are recouping from a motor vehicle accident, but you just felt like you still needed to be here to spend time with the listeners and myself, and you did not want to reschedule. So I thank you for that courage, and for just following through on your word, because our word is all we have, and it's good when we stand by that. So thank you for coming.
I'm glad to be here, and actually this is easier than trying to do housework with my injury, so you know, to sit and have an interview is actually pretty pleasant.
But isn't that what husbands are for, though?
Well,
do the housework?
He does some things, and other things he doesn't do too well. So I've had to kind of readjust my thinking as to and my priorities, what's important and what isn't. But I think we all have to do that in our lives from time to time. So, and I'm very lucky. My grown daughter has been coming up once a week and cleaning the house, so I don't have to worry about that.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Okay, you know something, as I did my research and look over things, you are not just called coach for any reason, because you coach swimming, you coach volleyball, you coach track, you coach baseball.
Yes.
You are indeed a coach.
Yes, I am. A lot of people are kind of amazed. I started off when I was younger. I was a competitive swimmer. I swam on the swim team, and I was a member of the Amateur Athletic Union and tried out for the Olympic trials. When I went to college, I was on the swim team at Bowling Green State University. When I graduated, a lot of the principals of the schools that I was working for found out I had this background, so they had me coaching certain things.
Yes. Wonderful. I looked at it and I said, my heavens, she's well-rounded, because normally in the athletic coaching arena, they always coach one thing and they stick to that, but that's good. Okay, so you were born in Cleveland, Ohio. I know you reside in Philadelphia.
Yes, I've been here for about 23 years.
All right, so now they just adopt you down there and they say, well, this is our Philly girl. Well, let us just start at the beginning, Holly. What would you like the listeners to know about you? I want you to take a few minutes and just introduce yourself
Sure.
to the listeners. What do you want them to remember you by when we finish this conversation?
Well, I want them to remember that no matter what happens in your life, good or bad, which I also on my show talk about, we can overcome certain obstacles and certain things that happen in our life
mm-hmm.
with a positive attitude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I preach health wellness along with mental wellness. So that's what I would like to be remembered for. My legacy is to help other people and to coach them through their difficult times.
Mm-hmm.
I work with the vets from the Vietnam War here in Philadelphia, and I work with alcoholics and drug addicts here live, And on my radio show, I talk about health care issues and issues that challenge our lives. So that's what I want to be remembered for. And that and the fact that I'm probably one of the greatest grandmothers in the world and, a good wife and mother and all that kind of thing.
Sweet. Let us take a brief visit back to Cleveland, Ohio, when this beautiful baby girl was born. And as she grew up, what was the beginning of her life journey like?
Well, I had a rough one, but not because of my parents. I actually ended up with post-traumatic stress disorder because of an injury when I was 18 months old. And when you're that young, you don't remember it. Back in the 1947, when I was born, the medical technology is not what it is now. So I suffered with it for probably a number of years before actually healing myself. So my parents had to deal with me after the accident. Because I was 18 months old, from the time I was 3 until I was about 10, I had a series of ailments that they really couldn't diagnose. They were mostly mental, I might add, just fears and phobias and things like that. So that part of my childhood was difficult. My parents were wonderful. I come from a German-American family. I have 3 other brothers and sisters, and it was a happy well-balanced family,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's probably what's kept me going as I go through life is I had those really great beginnings, and I had a lot of love. I had a big, happy family that was all in the same neighborhood. I could walk to my grandmother's house. We had a sense of God and a sense of hardworking, German people work hard. And, you know, that's what my parents brought me up on. If you work hard, you can overcome anything. So I joined the swim team, I think, probably to just build up my self-esteem.
Hey, before you move on to the swim part,
mm-hmm.
I want to just piggyback on something you mentioned now.
Sure.
Very important. You mentioned about being able to walk to your grandmother's house. And
yes.
As I look on our children growing up now in America, and I can only speak about America because this is where I live now,
mm-hmm.
they have been deprived of the ability to walk freely to go to any place.
I agree with you. Here in Philadelphia, it's a serious problem.
I am from Jamaica, and I go to Jamaica, and you look on the little kids, they walk into the neighbors, they walk into the stores. They are free to just walk and enjoy the outdoors. But here, I think maybe it's because of all that's going on with parents being so fearful, because we don't know what will happen if we allow our kids to just walk across to the neighbor's house. People are driving like lunatics, or people probably snatch your kids and you don't know. So the kids now then resort to sitting inside before
yeah.
the TV or the video games, and they do not enjoy the outdoors.
That is a problem. And especially with some of the kids that I've had contact with, they don't have a sense of family. A lot of people don't. We have a lot of divorce in our country, and a lot of, I won't call it silliness, but sometimes people don't really realize the impact it has on their children and how depressing it is for them to lose a parent and to lose a set of grandparents because one parent isn't allowing them to go visit them.
I think people are selfish.
Yes, and also they are not being held accountable for their actions. And this is one thing I teach not only on my radio show, but in my counseling groups here in Philadelphia. You have to be accountable for your actions. You have to take responsibility, negative
yes.
or positive. You have to own up to the things
right.
too. And we have a
yes,
lot of people
and,
blaming
you know,
other
just,
people.
Think about your children first. Regardless of the decision you are going to make, you put your children first, because they didn't ask us to come into this world.
That's true. That's true. And in fact, my oldest daughter, every once in a while, has thrown that back at me, and you know, I have to agree with her. You know, she didn't have much of a choice in the matter. We end up laughing about it, but you know, sometimes when you're angry, you go, "Hey, I didn't ask for this." You know.
All right. I want to welcome Buzz Talk Radio to the show. And the people in the chat room, when you do have a question, if you just type it, I will relate to Holly. And when we get some people on the phone, we're going to take questions as we go along. So, Holly, continue. You were going to talk about swimming.
Yes. I was kind of talking about my childhood, and speaking of roaming free, I grew up in the city of Cleveland, but I was on the outskirts, and my grandparents, who lived on the same street as my parents, left their back door open for all of us grandchildren, so when we walked home from school, no bus, we could grab a ginger ale or a Coca-Cola from the refrigerator and have a snack if they didn't happen to be around. That's unheard of in this time. But in the time that I grew up, people left their doors unlocked, and there was no problems with that. So I have fond memories, because a lot of times my grandmother was a superb cook, and if I hung out long enough, she would invite me for dinner. And I would call my parents and say, "Grandma invited me for dinner," and I would stay there, and then they would drive me home after dinner, because it was usually, you know, dark by then. I had a very, very good childhood, despite some, you know, an injury and some other things. I had the love of my family.
Yes.
I had wonderful brothers and sisters, and you know, we fought just like any other group of kids. But I was extremely fortunate to grow up in a family of non-drinkers and non-smokers. It seems to be very unusual in this country.
It's a blessing to have the issues, and it's a shame that when people encounter some challenges, they always, well, most times, not really always, but most times, they resort to alcohol or drinking instead of seeking out others that will just brainstorm with them and give them the support they need. And they know the alcohol and the drugs numb it, and they just go on for a while. But that's not a good thing to resort to, especially when you have children, you know?
Well, it saved me because I ended up, you know, kind of going into the field after a number of years, and we'll get into that later. But my background with my parents was what grounded me and made me what I am. They really, I'm not even going to say they were an inspiration. They were just good people and brought their children up properly. And I can probably count on one hand the times that I had to be disciplined. But when I was, it was because I deserved it. And those kind of things really stick with you as you get older and as you're raising your own children or as you're teaching other children. You remember what it's like to be a child and have that safety. Some of the children I'm dealing with do not have that safety net. They have parents they can't trust, or they have parents who drink and smoke, and worse sometimes. They have very unstable backgrounds. And I don't know, see, from my viewpoint, I don't understand the love affair we have with alcohol and drugs because it's so unhealthy. Why would you want to put something into your system that's going to kill you? But
Holly,
what we're doing.
But the thing is that you and I who are not involved in that, we don't understand.
No.
And till the person can understand themselves, we just need to support them and offer for them a system and a process by which they can heal, because it is like physical abuse, and you know, and people always say, but why don't the person just leave?
Well, and that's one of the things that I'm involved with here in Philly, is abused wives and mothers and children, and you've brought up a good point, because these are the things that are kind of tearing our society apart, I could go on and talk about it that way, but I do realize that having a good, solid family background does ground you for your later adult years. I mean, it really does matter if you're raising children to give them that stability if you possibly can. And I'm not saying that there aren't situations where, you know, divorce is in keeping, especially with an abused wife and children, you know, that family situation. There's no reason to stay with someone that abuses you mentally or physically. And I don't advocate staying with someone that does that because it does a lot of damage. I was lucky. I didn't have that kind of damage when I was a child. And it's a good thing because when I went into my adulthood, I had a number of years, I married an alcoholic. And he was abusive. And this is where I come by. My advice is very honest and forthright to women because I am one myself. And you lose yourself. You lose your personality. You abused women lose a little piece of their self-esteem, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. And so when I got to the work that I'm doing now currently, which has brought me to Blog Talk Radio and has brought me into circles here in Philadelphia, my fight or my quest is to make sure that all of these people know that there's someone out there that loves them and that really cares, because that's what they really need. They need a lifeline to come back and get back to, you know, a life that they can live with. You never get over it, but what I try to give them is a life that they can live with, a healthy life. And sometimes that has to be without your spouse or without the abuser or without, you know, being married to an alcoholic or whatever. So my early years really helped with this because it's kind of given me a sense of what's good, you know, what works.
Okay. Holly, we only have 39 minutes remaining in this episode, so I want to just fast forward to the topic at hand for today, post-traumatic stress disorder. And with you sharing in depth about the beginning, now I know why you are so passionate about that topic. Because
I'm very passionate.
When I first heard you spoke about it, I thought you just acquired that diagnosis / label after your military life, but I had no idea that it was from early childhood. So let us talk about post-traumatic stress disorder and what is the impact that it has on your life?
Well, that's a really good question. The original, what I call the core trauma, happened when I was 18 months old. When I was in the military, I was in Navy Civil Service, and I was overseas during the Vietnam War, it was considered war duty, but believe me, I wasn't really right smack dab in the middle of the war. I had an experience with a bomb. A bomb went off 15 yards from where I was standing, and I almost really pretty much, I'm very lucky to be alive from that experience, but apparently, because I already had post-traumatic stress disorder, now, mind you, I didn't know I had it, because back then, that wasn't the term that was used, and being 18 months old, you know, I couldn't remember what happened. Actually, when I described the event, it's what my mother described to me, because I can't remember it at all. That's pretty normal for a post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, experience. As we get to be adults, though, people, places, things, smells will trigger an episode.
Yes.
So, so the bomb going off in Guam was the final straw for me. I had been able to cope and have a pretty decent life up until then, but it caused me to have a nervous breakdown, what we call a nervous breakdown. I mean, I was a basket case. I couldn't go out of the house. I was pregnant with one of my children, and I feared. I just, it completely, it's one of those things where, you know, you can, when you're injured, you can see the injury. This is one you can't see. And people are looking at you. You're perfectly healthy looking, but you're not inside.
Right.
And that's why it's so misunderstood. Our soldiers that are coming back right now are coming back like that. And sometimes they've had a core trauma before that. But going over and viewing the acts of war or violence or being abused, any of these things can trigger post-traumatic stress disorder.
Ali, I want to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Up until the time when the bomb triggered, did you have any idea about the trauma at 18 months?
I knew what had happened. My mother had told me exactly what happened, because she was very angry at the doctor who had done it. Because when you're 18 months old, if you think back, you're very young and your communication skills aren't really great. You know, you either scream, cry, you can't sit there and tell somebody reasonably, like I'm talking right now, hey, you're hurting me. And the doctor disregarded my screams. They tied me down on a trolley and proceeded to take, I had broken my leg, and they proceeded to take the cast off, which they do with a saw, and he sawed through my leg. I mean, literally sawed through my leg. I still have the scars from it. And my mother, who was not allowed to be in the operating room with me, could hear me screaming and knew something was wrong, and they wouldn't let her go in. So I was completely traumatized. When you're 18 months old, there's no way you can get over something like that. That's, there's no sense to it. Your trust, you know, at that point, you trust your parents, you trust the you know, doctors, you trust people not to hurt you. And that was a very young age to have that kind of trauma.
Right.
So it affected my trust factors. You know, when my mother explained that when they wouldn't let her into the room, you know, that made sense to me as an older person, but I'm still really have issues with abandonment. I have issues with doctors. I go to them, and I've had to go to a lot of them lately, but I'm really nervous about this injury that I have because they're going to have to take the cast off with the saw. And Carl, my husband, who was sitting in the office with me, saw me. This wasn't happening to me. It was someone next in the room next to me was having their cast taken off, and the sound of the saw made the color of my face drain. I didn't realize it. He came over. He says, "Are you all right?" And I just realized the sound of the saw had triggered post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, I was perfectly fine. If you looked at me, I wasn't, you know, running out of the office screaming or something like that. But something in my mind was remembering that experience. And I reacted to it.
Please, for the people who are listening to you, who are maybe they are just realizing now with all the definition and explanation that you're giving and the sharing of your experience, that they are probably suffering from the same diagnosis. Now, if something like that happens to them, what can they do to just survive through that? What did you do when that saw trigger something?
Well,
did you call the therapist? What did you do?
All right. At the point that I'm at in my life now, whether it's there are certain sounds and things that trigger not only the bomb, but this experience I had when I was 18 months old. And it comes back. It's actually a real vivid memory that you're reliving. So it's pretty intense. And the people around you sometimes don't understand that you're having what they call a flashback. That's the technical term for it. Now, I found as I started to understand my disorder better, because for a number of years I didn't know what I had. So when you're operating in ignorance, and you're going, I shouldn't be feeling like this, but what's wrong with me? You know, there's nothing wrong physically with me. And, of course, the stigma of, well, then it has to be mental, sticks with us as adults, and we really hesitate to go in and seek professional help when probably that's what we really need. And back even 15 or 20 years ago, there were no doctors or counselors that specialized in post-traumatic stress disorder, because that wasn't the term that was used. Our World War II veterans used the term shell shock, and our World War I veterans, they call it shell shock. So there's different names for it. It has existed back to the, you know, especially with people who have been in war, have this disorder, but it's had different names. So one thing is we've all gotten on the same page as giving one term for this condition, and that's post-traumatic stress disorder. And that's
okay, but you know, it's good that you mention the layman's term as well, because a lot of times, because of the different labels and people are not accustomed, they would go lacking treatment, the professional help that they need to be able to live a productive life. So
exactly. Exactly.
That are listening, whether they say you have post-traumatic stress disorder or shell shock, it's the same thing.
Exactly.
And you can live a productive life so long as you surround yourself with the needed support from professionals.
And, you know, your family, if you can get them on the same page too, because they sometimes misunderstand. But what I found, when I started working with Timothy Kendrick, who you know, and other people who had post-traumatic stress disorder, the Veterans Administration and all these people that I'm involved with, I began to understand why people didn't come for help as much as you would like, because sometimes they're very much mistreated and misdiagnosed. Plus the fact there are different categories of post-traumatic stress disorder, and I think a lot of us, when we hear the term, we attach it to the military. Well, there are people, civilians, who are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder also. And therefore, we have to categorize and say abused women and children have post-traumatic stress disorder. Children that are bullied in school and have any kind of fears in that matter, that is considered post-traumatic stress disorder. So we really have to kind of be realistic about the people who are suffering from this. It's not just a military, exclusive term. It really is for the whole general population. So therefore, a lot of our clinics are military clinics for post-traumatic stress disorder, and there are very few civilian. If you have post-traumatic stress disorder, you have to go to your doctor. And if he doesn't understand, or if he hasn't been, schooled in it, he may just prescribe the wrong medicine. He may not take it seriously, and it's not a reflection on him. It's just something that we haven't sorted out yet.
It's out of his expertise. Holly, where can the public find education availability around this? Because in order for spouses and family members to truly understand post-traumatic stress disorder, they have to go seek after the information to educate themselves.
Exactly, and that's where it starts. Is it's usually the person who's suffering from it has to try to understand what's happening to them. A lot of the emails I get are from civilians, not military. I do get some military, but they have treatment offers. I mean, there's clinics to go to and things in the military where you can actually go and be diagnosed with this. This is where my calling was to try to educate the public on post-traumatic stress disorder, and I'll give you an example of why it's so damaging. Let's say you have post-traumatic stress disorder, and you go to work.
Ali, hold on, please.
Mm-hmm.
Before you do that, because it's not everybody has the ability to hear your show or to tap into your expertise because they are out of your community. Is there a standard place?
Yes, and that's what I was going to get to, is diagnosing and realizing that you have it. The resources that are out there on the Internet, for instance, you can type in post-traumatic stress disorder, and you will get a definition along with several websites and phone numbers. Now, the only danger in the Internet is, and I found this, and I'm sure you have too, is some of these places charge money. Some of them, you really don't know the credibility of the people that are doing it. But I do find that the university studies on post-traumatic stress disorder absolutely pass the most accurate information and the latest treatments and the latest places and locations in your city. So I would say if you have access to the Internet, that's a very good place to go and find out about post-traumatic stress disorder. And what I was going to say about my show was I try to educate people, and whether they're family or whether they're friends, I do try to provide phone numbers and websites and books that they can read to try to understand the disorder. I always feature some books on whatever the subject matter is on my show, because it's not always about post-traumatic stress disorder. So I imagine there's other shows out there that may deal with this. But I really take great exception with the people that are charging money on the Internet, $10 to join their post-traumatic stress disorder group and they have a cure, because I'm really pretty wary of that. I don't think you should charge money to try to help someone, diagnose whether they have post-traumatic stress disorder or not, unless you're a doctor. And, that's kind of the Internet's kind of one of those things where it's a real information factory, but you have to sort out what's legitimate and what isn't. So, and I've had the same problem because I've been doing research, and sometimes I'll get into a website and it's totally inaccurate or not really going to tell the person what they're really, you know, searching for. And they may even actually give them a false impression. So you have to be careful.
Do you think that the public libraries, the books that you mention on your show, because you say you mention books on your show, are those books in the libraries that the general public can have access to?
Well, I would hope that the library would carry them. But the way that the libraries work is they have to have a demand for that book. So unless you go in and if you go in on the shelves and there's nothing on post-traumatic stress disorder, you have to let the librarian know that this is a subject matter you'd like to see some books on, and then they have to order the right books and have them on hand. There are many books on post-traumatic stress disorder, but I would say a good half of them are medical. You know, I have the books that I have here are from my medical studies. And they're probably not designed for someone who just wants to read simply about post-traumatic stress disorder.
Holly, well, seeing that we really don't know who our listeners are, why don't you mention three of the books that you have found to be beneficial to you?
Oh, sure. I have one that I had from my studies, which is called Treating PTSD in Battered Women. This is a non-military condition, and it's really excellent. It is not something you're going to probably find in the library, though, but it is one of the best books that I've read in diagnosing and recognizing the disorder in women. I have several
Holly, the other two, are they... America, because I want you to offer something that they can go
right.
in, and if it's not there, they can request it to be there.
The other two that I'm going to recommend are written by Timothy Kendrick, and that's in fact, he's written a whole series, but his first one is Pathways Through a Secret Door, which is a bestseller, and he is a post-traumatic stress disorder sufferer as well as a military retired military, and he wrote this in terms that you can understand. I highly recommend that book. He also, the one that I've been very impressed with is his Why to Sleep, which was just released. And again, he's dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. He has one that he has written. It's called Retraining Your Brain. I don't know if you had a chance. I know you know him too, but I don't know if you've had a chance to read that. But it is excellent. And
let me ask you. I just want you, because the focus of my show is not really to promote people's products.
Exactly.
And what I want for you to do is, it's kind of too late now, and we can't retract it. So you just mentioned a book that was just released, and I don't know whether you read it and how beneficial it is. So. Maybe
well, I read all of his stuff, and Timothy and I exchanged because we're military. I'm not really promoting him. I'm just saying it's one of the best books that I have read that the general public can read, that it's not
exactly.
a medical book, and that's why I recommend it. There's a couple of them that you can get maybe at Barnes & Noble, and one of them is called Undoing Depression. And it's
I just asked you for three, and you already did three.
Right.
So, with for the interest of time, I want to just go back to the general conversation.
Okay.
We only have 21 minutes, but before you go, I want to give you an opportunity to tell people how to tune into your show.
Oh, all right.
To reach you, so in case we get short at the end, I don't deprive you. So take an opportunity.
Right.
That now, please.
Well, I appreciate that. I have a Tuesday night show from 8:30 till 10, and basically it's not just about post-traumatic stress disorder. It's about modern medical issues. Every week it's a different subject, and I try to educate the public on some of these issues that sometimes you can't learn from your doctor, or sometimes they're not really, information is not easily gathered for some of these conditions and some of these things. We've talked about depression. We've talked about post-traumatic stress disorder. We actually ran a series on weight loss and the latest research on that. So it's a good show. It's a friendly show and a friendly chat room where people just come to ask questions and listen to me talk. And, you know, every once in a while somebody calls in. And every once in a while I have a guest speaker just like you, depending on the show. But it is every Tuesday night from 8:30 till 10. It's called Coach's Corner. Come and join us. And the best way to do that is if you want to get onto my friends list, after the show here, you'll see a little icon with my picture, and it'll take you through to my profile, and you can join my website and become a friend and get the updates on the shows and tune into the ones that interest you, you know, whether it's weight loss or post-traumatic stress disorder or depression or some of the other issues that we're covering. We did have several on abused women, and that one's always been very popular. I do usually get quite a nice gathering of women on the show that have a lot of questions. So I feel that I'm doing some good with the show, and I enjoyed the research, and it's actually taught me a few things myself. So that's about it.
18 minutes, Holly.
Beg your pardon?
We have 18 minutes remaining in this episode.
All right.
Okay. So we want to go back to post-traumatic stress disorder, and you have given such a clear overview of how someone can realize whether or not they have that. You have given them some medium where they can go to be diagnosed, and you give them some resource that they can use.
Right. Exactly.
Now, how would you like to use your next 15 minutes?
Well, I'll leave it up to you. I'm enjoying the show, and I'm very passionate about what I do in life. I didn't take it on because of financial gain or anything like that. I took it on because I really think most of us who have depression and who have post-traumatic stress disorder and some of these conditions really need enlightenment. We need to be educated on what we're dealing with. I have had a lot of the soldiers write to me, and not only just soldiers, but people non-military, say they walked into the doctor, told them what was wrong with them, and before they even talk to them, they write a script out and say, here, come back in 2 weeks. Take these pills and come back in 2 weeks. Now, if I thought a pill could solve all of my problems, I'd be taking them. You know, I just think we're a society that just thinks we can just pop a couple of pills and we're going to be okay, and that's not, some of these
the
conditions, it's not right to handle it that way.
Let me ask you this question.
Sure.
What tips can you give to a person who is suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder to help them to live a productive, meaningful life like you are doing? What are some tips and guidelines? If you would help them create a checklist.
Okay, that's a very, very good point, because it's really hard if you don't know what you're dealing with. A lot of people don't even know they have post-traumatic stress disorder. I've had several people come on the show and say, I've got that. That's why I tuned into this show. And then they have to take the next step. You know, once you realize you have it, I would say then you become a sponge and you try to learn as much about your disorder as possible and what got you there, and learn about your core trauma. Sometimes it requires going to a therapist or a counselor, and if you can afford that or you have good medical, that's what I suggest. But
right.
For those people who sometimes they're compromised that way, there are plenty of free clinics or free treatment out there. And that's when I advocate that if you don't have internet access, go to someone that does. In fact, your local library does. A lot of them have internet service now, and have your librarian type in post-traumatic stress disorder and try to gather as many phone numbers as you can. Now, here in Philadelphia, we have several hospitals and universities that are running free clinical trials on post-traumatic stress disorder. And if you are compromised, medically speaking, and can't afford a counselor or a therapist, they will provide it for you.
Just people starting a support group.
Exactly. That's another really good source. Of course, we all know about AA, and that has had a good success rate. You can get into support groups, and let's face it, all the people that are in the support group have had similar experiences and understand what you're talking about, and it's good to have that support. Now, the area that is a gray area is the family and friends and bosses.
Right, because I was just going to ask you.
Right.
Do you recommend that the family members become part of that support group?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
A lot of times, Holly, people think that, oh, I'm the only one, poor me.
Exactly.
And start listening to somebody else who say, oh, I have it good.
That's right. I mean, it's simply that is the truth. I mean, a lot of us who don't go to get the help are alone. And because you're alone and you do it alone, it's worse.
Yes,
and that's the one
yes.
thing you have to get people past that, to start talking about their experience, to stop being ashamed that they have it. You know, there's a lot of dynamics with having those kind of disorders and a lot of stigma. And if you can get them past that point and educate themselves as to what they're dealing with, that's fine. But I do find that the family, friends, people that you work with are very ununderstanding. And they're the ones that really need the education. After once you get the diagnosis and once you're dealing with it, the people around you need to know what they're dealing with too.
That
really makes a smoother, healthy healing machine for you.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Holly, we have 12 minutes.
I don't know where the time went. It went so fast.
Amazing. Where did the time go?
Exactly.
I want to give you an opportunity to just summarize your thought and highlight those points from our conversation that you see worthwhile to stick out to the listeners that want to help their family members or friends or spouses or even themselves through this tragedy.
I think that the one thing that I advise to anyone is to educate yourself. Knowledge is power.
Yes.
And once you know what you're dealing with, it really takes the fear away. It doesn't take it totally away, but it does help to diminish it once you know what you're dealing with. And the other thing is, be an active part of your diagnosis and your treatment. It is your body, it is your mind. Don't let other people have you do something that you diametrically are opposed to or you don't feel comfortable with.
That just makes
the situation worse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and my example, of course, is always diagnosis of drugs. Always ask, what does this drug do and what are the side effects?
Yes.
A lot of people don't. They're afraid or they feel they're challenging their doctor. And especially if they haven't spent enough time with you and you don't feel that they really understand what you're trying to say and you're not comfortable, you have every right to talk about that with that doctor and express your concern, hopefully in a way that they understand. I find a lot of people just, take their doctor says, here, there's nothing wrong with you, and they walk out the door, and they're walking out the door going, but yes, there is something wrong with me. And, we need to kind of educate people on how to talk to your doctor.
Okay, Holly, there's a question from the chat room. Let me see here. I want to read to make sure I have another. With Holly's post-traumatic stress disorder, does she realize her strength in helping others? And that, do you realize your strength in helping others?
Well, I've been told that. Sometimes I feel a little humbled by that, because a lot of what I do is a kind of a combination of having post-traumatic stress disorder and my education. So I've been able to kind of combine the two, and a lot of the people who have post-traumatic stress disorder have told me I make total sense to them. And it kind of stops me a little bit because I feel such a sense of responsibility. So, no, I don't always realize that, but I do get a lot of strength by helping others.
Yes, and the person also wants you to know that your upcoming removal of the cast,
yeah,
because of the help and support that you are giving others, that will help you through. Because, in other words, this person wants you to realize that when you enter that operation room, you are not alone, because there are a lot of support and priors that is coming your way, and that it's going to be all right. So no need
right
to fight that, because the hundreds of people that you have been helping, their spirits and priors will be there with you.
I know that. That's probably why I'm so humbled, you know, because I am an extremely lucky person. And not everybody is lucky, and those are the people I'm trying to reach. I have a husband who understands why I went pale in the doctor's office. He has been educated. He knows every one of my fears, and he is a complete supporter. He will be in with me when the cast is removed, because he knows that even though I'm a 62-year-old woman, when the sound of that buzzsaw goes on, I'm 18 months old again. And he will be there to make sure that it goes well. And it will. I have an excellent doctor. I mean, my adult side says nothing's going to go wrong. But I've got this little side to me that is extremely nervous about it. That's post-traumatic stress disorder. And even though I'm talking about it and educating other people, I still have little bouts with it, and this is one I'm going to have to deal with. But I'm going to deal with it much better than I would maybe 20 or 30 years ago when I wasn't being treated and when I wasn't treating others. You know, as I said, knowledge is power. I know what triggers it now. I know what's causing my discomfort and my fears. So that helps me. That helps me to understand me and
yes,
what drives me.
Yes, yes, yes. We have 7 minutes remaining, and I want you to just give us your closing thoughts. I know I asked to give a summary just now on a checklist to the listeners. So give us your closing thoughts, Holly.
Okay. I first of all, I really want to thank you for having me on here. I really am trying to get the word out, so I really appreciate you having me on. Plus the fact,
mm-hmm,
I don't really talk about myself very often on my show. You know, that the show isn't about me. So I was really blessed with that, because I'm still struggling with my own issues, and I want people to know that I'm not a cold counselor that hasn't had the experience, that I actually have some real experiences myself that help me to formulate and help other people. So that has been really good for me to be on your show and talk about myself a little bit and who I am and where I came from. That actually
mm-hmm
was a learning experience for me. This is how we learn. This is how we sort things out. We have to sort out our thoughts and our feelings, and that's what I like about these shows is it does a lot of good for people, and they learn from
mm-hmm
other people, you know, how to do things, how to think, commiserate on an experience or whatever else. And especially with post-traumatic stress disorder or any other related disorder, I think we need to start educating the public more on
mm-hmm
what the options are. So
mm-hmm
anytime I get a chance to talk about it and be able to have a forum for it, I'm very appreciative, and I want to thank you for that.
me ask you, what
doing it again.
Beyond the Blog Talk Radio, what can we look for from Holly in this area in the next, let's say, 5 years?
Oh, in the next 5 years. I'm writing a book on post-traumatic stress disorder, and it will be a hands-on book. It will not be a clinical book. It will be for the general public.
Mm-hmm.
And my plan is, I have several people that I'm in communication with who have post-traumatic stress disorder, and I would like them to write their story. And so it'll be kind of a breakdown of their experiences and how they dealt with it,
mm-hmm.
including my own. So I have several people lined up that are willing to participate in the book, and I think it will be a very good one, because when you really get to know a person and get their, you know, their personal experiences, I think that's a learning experience in itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how they struggled through with their own conditions. And as you said before in the show, you're not alone. You know, you don't feel alone. And I want to make it available and affordable for everyone. So that's another thing about books, is sometimes some of these books are $24.95 or $30 or something. I want it to be something that people can go and actually, oh, I can afford this, an affordable book. So that's my goal in the next 5 years. And my personal goal, I'm working towards retirement. I'm semi-retired right now. I'm 62. So I'll probably be spending more time on research and less time on getting in the car and going out and working in the workforce, which takes a lot of my time. The other part
Holly,
of my time is my grandchildren, of course, my children.
Holly.
I'm right here.
I have a caller, and I want to make sure whether or not the caller have a question. So hold on,
great.
Please. Good morning, caller. Your first three digits are 818. Do you have a question for Holly?
Well, I am in the hole. This is Ricky Tedford, and I just want to let you know I'm waiting. But since I am on, I just want to let you know I've been enjoying the information that Holly has been giving and the way the show is going. So I don't want to precede my time, but Holly, I really appreciate the information. It's very helpful.
Oh, I hope it was. Thank you. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay.
All right. I'm not hearing you. I kind of lost you there.
You're still talking to me?
Okay. I'm still talking to you because I heard Daphne, but she sounds like she's in Alaska.
Okay.
Do you have any questions for me?
No,
he has no question. He is the next guest. He wanted to just comment.
Oh, great. Okay.
The information you gave out. So you have 2 minutes to wrap up your closing thoughts, Holly.
All right. Well, I want to thank everyone for tuning in and listening so patiently to my story. And I hope that I was able to reach some people and be able to be beneficial in educating them about post-traumatic stress disorder. And as I said before, if you are so inclined and you want to contact me, down in the listeners group is a twins, and that's me. And you can click on that picture, and it'll take you to my profile, and you can write to me, or you can become a friend and get an update on what I'm doing on Blog Talk Radio. I am also on Facebook and MySpace, and I give regular bulletins and updates on both, and I'm Twittering. I was against it for a while, but it is pretty valuable for getting some, you know, short-term information out, like, you know, the show information and things like that. I don't use it for personal messages. I just basically post any information that I think people need to know. So I'm on all of those. And I'm more than happy to hear from anyone if you want to write to me, or you feel you listen to the show and you feel there's something that needs to be added, or if you want to be a guest on the show, I'd be more than happy, to consider that and schedule you in, including you, Daphne.
Want to thank you so much for coming on and for so eloquently sharing with our guests, and I hope you'll stick around to support our other guests. Thank you, and keep doing God's work, and keep touching lives. Have a great day.
You too.
Good morning, Ricky. How are you?
I'm overflowing. How are you? I'm doing great.
I am blessed, and I am highly favored. So I'm having a bit of a technical challenge this morning with the system, but we're going to anoint it in the name of Jesus, and we're going to just have a blessed morning. You know, when I have guests from California, I'm always so thankful because I know you guys have to wake up at the crack of dawn to be on here. So I thank you. From the sound of things, Arlene will not be joining us this morning.
No, she's a little under the weather. She's been studying for her, what they call CLEs, continued learning, whatever. She's an attorney, and so she has to spend countless hours on the computer and still give me some time, and I have to commend her for that. And I just want to let her know, I love you, honey. And so by giving all this time that these attorneys have to put in spite of what they're trying to do, and still live a life with families, that's, I would say, double overtime. And so I appreciate her for that. And there's no way I can ask her to, who's been up all night, to, you know, come on the show with maybe an hour, 2 hours sleep. That wouldn't be fair. So I'm up. And so I'm just honored to be here today, Daphne. So I thank God for her. He's really, he answered my question, I guess, later on in the interview. I'll get a chance to share how we met. I'm still here. I don't know if I'm broadcasting or not, Daphne. You sound a little faded. And I know you mentioned the blog technical stuff, but can you hear me?
Can you hear me, Ricky?
Okay. For a second, you got real low. I could not. I think your previous guest mentioned that you had faded out. And I know I had some of those challenges, too, with Blog Talk Radio. So for you and for the listeners out there, I want to apologize if there's any difficulty. It's not Daphne. Sometimes the systems, computers, and satellites do get a little mixed up here. But we're still here.
Hey, why don't you please take this few couple of minutes to introduce Ricky Tedford to the listeners?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm a born again Christian. I have been for over the last 35 years. I'm married. I have four children, one grandchild. And it's just been the most exuberating experience one can have. And what has happened in the last several years, Ricky grew up I was born in Kentucky, but I grew up in South Central. I was raised out here. I got a chance to experience a lot of things. I became very interested in school and the area of acting as well as sports. And so how I ended up going into entertainment, I gave up acting to pursue sports. And over the years, through college, my senior thesis, I got back into acting. I produced a musical as my senior thesis. And upon graduation, I continued to pursue football. And what happened is I played with several professional teams. And eventually I made my way back to California. I left for a while, and I came back home. And that's where I had all these wonderful things happen to me. And in the last year, believe it or not, I was blessed with the opportunity, having gone through some tragedy. Basically, I tried to run from the ministry. But I finally surrendered. And when I did surrender, it seemed like everything went haywire. But, you know, that was the enemy trying to thwart me from focusing on what God would have for me to do. And so what I did is I learned that, you know, no matter how much you try and achieve a goal, that one, there is a God, and then there is an enemy. And in the process of that, I learned how to stand fast in faith. And so in the year 2000, I find myself as a single dad with three kids. And the next thing I know, I find myself having surrendered to the ministry. And upon surrendering, you never would have told me I would have gone back to college to get education in theology. Well, I learned the importance of that, not only in theology, but how the principle, God's principle, apply to every single thing we do in life. And so I found myself entered there. And what happened during that time period in my life, because I had already, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, but I had already been a Los Angeles police officer for a number of years, and at that point I was still a reserve. I had started and ran a security company for 7 years. I went through over 300 employees, so I had a great deal of personal success, but I still know that God had me directed for a journey, and that was to get his work out. So while in Bible college, I had dealt with a lot of social issues, and one of the issues at that time, we're talking about back in 2000, was the music. And we have all these talented kids, but at one period in time, and sometimes it's there, and we have so many talented people, that music was being used as a way to promote a lot of negative vibes. In other words, with the foul language, and you have all these talented artists and young kids, and the image that was being portrayed was one that was creating a lot of violence and the profanity, and there was a lot of defaming of people, especially, and I'm speaking from my own personal experience, there was a lot of defaming African-American people in a lot of this music. And these promoters were utilizing these kids to promote these lyrics and use this profanity. A lot of African-American women, my mother's a woman of color, my children, my daughters, my wife. So at this time, of course, I didn't know my wife at the time, but, you know, that really bugged me. And so one day I was going to class, and I asked, I had a kid go by with his music blasting, and I said, "Lord, what can we do about this music?" And the Lord spoke back, heard an audible voice, "Tell me, network market music and entertainment." And I'm like, and I believe it or not, me, I answered the voice back. I said, I'm telling God now, I'm telling God, "Lord, I'll never do any kind of network marketing unless I started my," and I stopped. I literally caught myself. I found out that that's what God was telling me. Now, how I was going to go about this journey at that time, I had no idea. Because at that point in my life, I didn't even own a CD. I had 8 tracks. I had some cassettes. And again, I'm not from the music entertainment industry per se. I was an actor. But because of my previous experience in business, I knew the route I would take, and I knew what God told me in that previous experience, which gave me insight in how to go about this, and that was find the people who could provide what I need to get the goal accomplished. And so from that day, I started, and that's been almost 9 years ago, I began the journey of creating an entertainment marketing company. Because, again, I'm talented in all these areas. I knew that I needed to find the right people. And so in doing so, that's where my journey started. And it wasn't always easy. I got rejected. At that time, the record companies were just doing real well, but had no idea that they would eventually fall by the wayside. And in this long journey, about almost a year ago, I placed an all these people in place. And when I did, I was still short of one person. We needed a contract attorney. Well, I was still single. And at that point, I walked into a restaurant. I was actually scheduled to go to another one on a lunch break. And the Lord spoke to me and said, get back in your car and go over to McDonald's. And I went over to McDonald's. And I saw these group of children, and I saw this pretty little daycare worker. And, boy, I wanted to talk to her. And I pulled out my card. I walked up to her, and I asked her, oh, hi, how are you? Her mother was in front of her. She introduced me to her mother. And I said, do you have any children here? And she said, there's mine back there. Well, I saw this young man back there, and I thought immediately, oh, my God, that's her boyfriend. So I gave up. I put my card in my pocket, but eventually the young man came up by her, and he looked at her mother. He says, hey, Grandma. I said, what? I said, this is your son? And she said, yeah, well, I reached in my pocket. I got two cards out because I want to give him one now.
Right.
But it was Arlene who volunteered on days, which she's going to, we're supposed to volunteer this afternoon with her family's daycare. She does a lot of their legal papers. And so that's how we met. And 3 days later, she finally called me back. And we talked for like 6 hours on the phone. I knew that this was the one, because so God gave me a double dose of my answer. He gave me not only the contract attorney we needed, but he gave me a lovely companion. And so
I want to piggyback on something you mentioned about being at theology school, because I am such an advocate for people operating in their true calling and purpose.
Yes.
And one of the things I continually tell people, it's not difficult to identify your calling and your purpose, because that thing that you are created to solve, that problem that you were created to take care of, every time you pass by, every time you encounter that thing, it eggs you, it annoys you, it aggravates you. And you know, this is something that I got to fix. And when you mentioned about the boombox going by and agitating you so much that you had to ask God, what are we going to do about this? And God is telling you, not what we're going to do, but what you're going to do, because that's what you are created for.
That's right.
And out of that, birth the Fan Club International. And let us go into that.
Yes.
I want you to explain for the listeners, because I'm also a part of the Fan Club International, and people probably thinking, you don't even do no music. Yes, I do. I sing, and I can learn to play some instruments. So there is my answer for you for that. But Ricky, would you please explain what is the Fan Club International and what are the advantages? Why should the listeners, the minute they get off of this show, just switch their computer and become part of this wonderful organization?
Okay. Can I first answer the question that you asked? You asked me what was the cause. I got it to the cause. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to make sure I answer that for you. First of all, I had been a Los Angeles police officer in the city of Los Angeles. And I grew up in Los Angeles, and I saw at that point what the music, the profanities, the F-U's and the calling C's and H's and all of, and I'm talking about the
African-American
community. And if these kids were, and I'm going to give you a word, they were bamboozled. A lot of these, if they're listening now, they can probably tell the slow shift away from the degrading gangster rap. Now, there's nothing personally wrong with rap. It's just when you are doing something to try, and not only in music, but this even happens in comedy.
Yes.
You got people trying to curse to get a laugh. If you can't get somebody to laugh without cursing, you're not good. You're not
in the right field.
No, you're not funny. And so this
It's
been a selling point to degrade African-American people, minorities, Hispanics, most people of color. And so what has happened, if you notice the people in American Idol, you don't hear them cursing.
That's right, and they excel in getting a lot of money.
Exactly. I'm just using that one aspect. But it was being a police officer, seeing the gang violence. I mean, definitely, if you've never put a body in a body bag, or you've never had to inform a mother that your child is dead, and you need to come to the morgue, and you have a little woman who's 100 pounds, and you grab her to stop her from falling to the ground, and here I am 200 pounds, she takes me down because all the weight and pain that's put on her, and there's nothing I could do. Knowing I'm a Christian, there's nothing I could do to take the pain out of this woman. How can I explain the very child that you birthed, who's supposed to bury you, you're going to now bury. And Lord, I'm here for a reason. I'm experiencing this. And so I see these, I've seen where people are playing music and giving different symbols through their music and then shooting somebody. And we had some very known artists who were, I won't go into their names, people know of them. This was a bamboozlement into the people of color society, and people made money off of it who wasn't affected by it, and we thought that looks good. And I think there's a place in the Bible, and I'm just going to finish this up here. I'm going to get that, then answer a question about the fan club. That it says, in the latter days, what's bad will be good or look good, and what's good will be bad, seem bad. And unfortunately, the Bible also says, you know, in those last days, people can't stand sound doctrine, or in other words, truth. And for instance, what you're doing on your show is truth. Okay, it's allowing the message or the word or the idea of various people's lives. You are the catalyst in which most people, believe it or not, your show, because I know that you are a born-again believer, your show is probably the only Bible that many people will get a chance
to read.
Hear, but they're hearing it. But this is probably the only chance some people will ever get a chance to hear that. So your show is, God was smart enough to put you in this place for this show, for this purpose, because only you can do this like you're doing it. So that was the reason why I got tired of it. I've had family members affected by this, drugs, and everything. So that really burned in my spirit. It gave me a righteous indignation to want to fight it. And so I had already went into network marketing, and that's how, when God spoke to me and said, start your, I said, I'll never do it unless I started my own. I heard myself. And so,
That's right.
Yeah,
because that problem was for you to solve.
Exactly.
That's why God created Ricky, regardless of the acting, the police officer work, those were just preparation for this project.
Yes.
You know?
And so since that time, you know, I've acted, I've been in a movie, co-starred in a movie, a short story. I haven't pursued that as much as I can because I'm coordinating most of it, and I will get to that point. But that led me to creating a company, and because, now remember, as I explained this to you, I've been ordered, okay, because I have a good group of people around me. I've been basically directed by the people that are in our legal department to be very cognizant of, you know, saying too much about that gives away intellectual properties, mainly my wife, because she's a contract attorney. But what we have on the website is very simple. The fan club, which is public knowledge known as we created an entertainment marketing company. And the things that we do is real simple. One, we provide new avenues of entertainment exposure for aspiring and upcoming artists, authors, ministries, because all this has to do with communications, whether it's music or movies. Film producers, actors, comedians, we provide new avenues of entertainment exposure through various types of marketing venues.
Right.
Next, what we do is we've put together a program that allows an upcoming artist, and let's use vocal artists for example. You may remember, and Michael Jackson was real big in this. excuse me. It was how the artist were being handled by the record companies. In the old days, the artists would only get 2-3 cents off their millions and millions of CDs that were produced or albums.
Mm.
Well, this was a problem because, of course, they would get other royalty rights over everything. But what happened is they were milking the artists, most of these record label companies, very deceptive. And this is when I found out and researched this, it made me be a cop, really, again, to research how this was all happening. They would have artists have to sell 300,000 records before they would even get paid.
Wow.
And to this day, there are some like that. And my wife really gave me a good education on that. And there are companies who, and I want any of these artists out there that are listening, if you're hearing and you decide to call in, or anybody in the industry that understands this, you can, you know how this goes. But there are record label companies that will sign these young artists and have no intentions of taking them in the studio, just tie up their life for maybe a year, 2 years.
Mm.
They're sitting around. They can't even go out and perform or make another CD because they signed their life away legally.
Yes.
This way, these good artists or better artists are held in limbo.
They're in hospice, some of them.
Yeah. And see, now, this is another reason, the other part of why, not just because of the music, because of some of the bad music. All music isn't bad. I want to make that clear.
No music is bad.
No. It's just the lyrics and some of the music that was creating this poor image, and people drew a conclusion that people of color are some kind of monsters or something. But the other part of the equation, and why I started the fan club, and I'm still going to tell what we do. I only went on part one. And
I don't. You don't really have to say what you do.
Okay.
Why should people join? And I don't want you to misunderstand what I ask you. What are the advantages for them to join, to become a part? Because I think that's why your wife mentioned about giving away the intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
I just want you to share what it is, and you just did that. So what's the advantage for members?
Okay. Let me do that. And I have no problems in telling what it is we do. I have limitations in what I'm telling. Because see, we had people, believe it or not, about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago, there was a company that when we first put out our very first video, I'm talking about within a week, I get a call from one of our directors, Lenny Wiseman of Parliament Records. He says, Ricky, go to this website. There was a guy that immediately put out a video called, I won't say the name, but it was Fan Something.
Wow.
Saying word for word everything I said. And he tried to run off with it, and you know that it failed. But because they couldn't get past the greed factor. But in the case of what we do, okay, is that, again, and this other part of what I was going to say was not just the music, but it was things that were pertaining to the results of what was happening to the music, okay? Let me try and clarify this. Okay, so we had this poor image that was being projected, the prime and everything else. But, see, better artists weren't getting an opportunity, and that occurred to me. I was a pro athlete. I was a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm better than most of the people in the National Football League, and I wasn't getting an opportunity, so I knew there are better artists out there. And so in the fan club, and getting back on what you asked me, we provide new albums of entertainment exposure.
Mm-hmm.
So there are better artists out there. There's other Michael Jacksons, probably better, out here listening to this show right now. They just need that opportunity. Then
Exposure.
Mm-hmm. Then what we do is we help these artists who've been ripped off over the years. We give them the option. We show them how to be their own entertainment or record label company.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have the people that will consult them. Because if you think about it, when you go to the grocery store, when I went to the grocery store as a kid years ago, or even the gas station, I didn't bag the groceries. I didn't get out my car and check the oil. It was something our country called service.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it costs 100 times more just about in any kind of industrial market to go get something, but you have to do all the bagging. It's self-service now. There's no more service. Everything is all about about me.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this particular case, we help these artists learn. We provide them the business knowledge. We provide them how you do it, development on how to build your own entertainment company and keep your own records. So we have the people help them with their taxes. We have people that are professionals in the record industry, in the film industry, how to go about marketing yourself. And so this way, they can walk in. You don't need to sign this contract, because at the fan club, we don't sign artists. We're not going to be doing that. We're basically going to be representing. We want the rights to help promote what they're doing, their product, okay? And I'll explain more about that. But that's what we do, and that's number two. Number three is we go to these record companies who have this bad image of and this is what artists need to listen. All the people out there in the industry, this is why you should come to the fan club. Record label companies, whatever. We show you, instead of controlling these artists and taking control of everything they do, we show them how to partner.
And add value. Yep.
And create a franchise. See, you franchise, just like if you bought a McDonald's, you have McDonald's owns a percentage of everything out there. And
right.
McDonald's is not doing all the work. Because the people who are that own those various individual commodities or stores or entities, they're creative. They give. They just provide them the platform, and then they are able to use their creativity.
That's right.
Different prices, different places. So
we
got all these artists who have studios already, who have this. You don't need these people to get published. We'll help you promote your music or your comedy acts and all this, and you can be in control. We just want to network or partner with them in doing this. And then the record label company now can do this and have a better relationship with their artists. Next is we basically get the fan for the first time, and we make the fans a part of the entertainment industry. You know, the thing is, people think that the record companies and all the movie industry, they have all the money. For instance, the record company, now listen to this, Daphne, is a $120 billion industry, music industry alone. Daphne, there's only 6 billion people on the face of the planet. How come there isn't enough money to go around?
That's right. That's why I tell people, Ricky, when they talk about the recession and everything, I said there's a lot of money. There's no shortage. Because I am positioning myself so that after the quote-unquote recession is over, I'm going to have a powerful testimony. There's lots of money. It's just not being circulated.
Exactly. And so that's why you hear a lot of people say things like, oh, we don't want socialism. Well, if you look at the Bible, Jesus was a socialist. Jesus, the Bible, if people don't know where networking came from,
that's
where network marketing started.
He sent the 12 disciples. That's right. That's where network begins.
Right, and he got them to get 12 and them to get 12. And his product was the gospel.
That's right.
A best product in the world, because that product involved helping everyone. But here's the key. In our society, in America, and I can only relate to America, but again, my wife being from France, and she's able to share some things with me, I'm able to see.
Where's your wife from?
Originally from France.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so she taught me a lot of things, and so I knew some people from Canada, and so I see how different countries handle things.
In different countries,
they put people first. In our country, you hear this focus on capitalism.
Tough.
Yeah, and so what it is, when you capitalize, if you can imagine a pyramid, there's only a very small point at the top, but everything down at the bottom is it's wider and wider. Well, that's how our society is working. Wealthy people are taking advantage of people through lack of knowledge. The Bible says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge.
Lack of knowledge. And you see, right now, my friend, and who is also a member of the Fan Club International, Dr. Gerald Higginbottom. His program, this is what it is focusing on, building from the bottom up.
Exactly.
Because, you know, we are so accustomed from the top and it trickle down, so by the time it gets to the bottom, there's nothing for us, you know?
And you mentioned him. I actually had a chance to meet with him this weekend. And his yeah, I understand his concept of the program he is promoting. And we had a chance to break bread. He flew into Los Angeles and I met with
right.
him. And mm-hmm. it was a very astounding meeting. And that's yeah. true. Because see, for instance, my father, who taught me construction, he mm-hmm. built houses. And you know what? You've never seen a house built from the roof down.
That's right. It's always from the foundation up.
Right.
Hello.
Yeah. Now, you can build it. Now, if you ever notice cars carrying these building parts, you can build the roof first. But you're still going to have to prop up that roof eventually on a foundation. If you haven't built the foundation, it's going to get wobbly. It could fall. And that's what's happening.
That's right. That's right. Because you have to assemble still from the bottom up.
Exactly. And so as a result, we need to understand that in building anything, God's principles is really real. You have to build on solid foundation. And so
yes.
in the music industry, as I said, it's a $120 billion industry. And it's not the industry that has all the money. It's the fans. And you know what?
Mm-hmm.
The fans are the ones who's paying all the money, but they don't earn a dime.
Nothing.
So we put together a program that's going to be able to allow the fans to be a part of the industry and
mm-hmm.
create their own entertainment business and network mm-hmm. with the entertainers and with the entertainment companies, which
mm-hmm.
will create something that's never been seen before. And
mm-hmm.
this is, you know, again, the fourth thing we do. And finally, what we do is we create this international connection, which you are a part of. That's how I'm on your
mm-hmm.
show.
Right.
The Blog Talk Radio show opportunity really opened the door for us to get a forum of listeners and people and
mm-hmm.
archive these shows so that they can actually go out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we created the Fan Club International Blog Talk Radio show,
mm-hmm.
which allows
mm-hmm.
us to actually get a chance to expose various people in various areas of their life, whether they're ministers,
mm-hmm.
whether they're artists.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're doing. You're doing a great job
mm-hmm.
here. And if it's okay with you, Stephanie, can I give our website to the listeners right
yes,
now?
Yes, I was just going to ask you that because this blog talk kicked me out, and I'm not sure how many minutes we have, so I'm trying to get that back up. So while I do that, Ricky, I want you to give the contact information, how to reach you, and then we'll go back to dialogue until I get this back up and running. So
okay.
go
right.
right ahead, please.
Okay. Now, for the radio listeners, I want you to know, our website is www.fanclubinternational.com. Again, I'm going to repeat that. Our website is www.fanclubinternational.com. And our business line is area code 424-785-0556. Again, our business line is area code 424-785-0556. And if you're an artist, if you are a musician, if you're a business, a minister, you're an author of something, please feel free to give us a call.
Right.
And so that's what, Daphne, what we're trying to do. Okay.
Okay, Ricky. Let us, I just want to talk about the newbies, people who are vocal artists, I'm referring to now.
Mm-hmm.
But they have this talent and they have a couple of demos, but, you know, based on how the industry operates, they have everything sitting there gathering dust. What is their first approach to partnering and collaborating with the Fan Club International? What are the steps?
Okay, that's a good question. First of all, we want to inform everybody, come out and visit the site. Because, again, when you have this information, this intellectual property, this good product, you want to protect it. You want to get it out there. And because our society is so self-centered, God gave me a vision to create something that was fair and is enough room out for everybody. So first of all, go to fanclubinternational.com. not now. There, when you get to the fanclubinternational.com, there's two sides of that web page. There's the left side, which takes you to our business site, and we're wrapping up to kick off and launch various marketing opportunities here. And in the right side is our social site, which is fanclubinternational.ning.com. And so what you want to do is go on, read the information, and sign up for the social site. And I will encourage, my wife has told me to make sure I always encourage artists, if you come on the fan club and you have music, don't put your whole music up there. Fade it out. Don't just get snippets of it. You might play a track, because see, people will steal your product. And
oh yes.
Now
let me. It's a shame, but it's the truth.
It's the truth. And here, you know, Daphne, here's what happens. Is I didn't know. People are probably familiar with LimeWire. A lot of these companies that are over in Europe and UK. What they do is these young artists put their music out there, or even they have these record label companies who don't even let them know. They sell their music behind their back to LimeWire, and they're making money off the music, and this record label company is getting a kickback immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is an artist you need to understand. You can take control. I don't care if you're a comedian with tape information or whatever, but you need to take control. You have this product. When you go on the MySpace or Fan Club or any place, don't put your whole CD out there, because someone is taking it, and they're selling it in the UK immediately. And there's nothing you can do about it, because they're not bound by our laws. We want to come over. We're going to be launching our seminars, and we're going to be helping artists put together and start networking with their fans. We created a whole marketing system. The fans and artists are going to be together and building organizations. And, again, that's what we're doing. And so protect yourself, artists. Come there. Put your stuff on. Put it in snippets so that you'll be able to protect your property. And it's not. And if someone wants to hear it, you sell it yourself. That's what we'll tell. You'll sell it yourself, because we set up a system to sell it. But don't be so eager to make yourself vulnerable. And that's why I'm being very hesitant on all the things that I say. My wife had to really
exactly, because it's going to be too late once you put it out there, and they take all your stuff. It's too late. You there's no way you can retract that. It's already gone. So you have to protect it from the beginning.
Yeah. And here's another thing, Daphne. What we've done is we've, again, created a system. This is not just for music. Again, we have film producers. There's better film producers out there. There's movies that people will never get a chance to see. I don't know how... Well, we're being broadcast all over the world, but my wife's uncle, for example, has a movie out right now in selected theaters called Hollenbach, I believe, and it's a horror movie. He's a film producer. He goes all over the country, and it's in selected theaters. But if you look at that movie compared to The Exorcist, it's heads over heels much better. But the thing is, because our country in America has been such a monopoly, and they control, and see, this is where you and I, anyone with a fan, with a blog talk radio, can get the message out and get to the masses of people. Mm-hmm. We can then begin to open the door and educate people and get them unconditioned. See, people are listening to other radio shows, trying to get information, when actually a lot of times they're getting fed a bill of goods. If they were here, they're getting information that they're that could be of good use. It's promoting for the better welfare of the listeners and the people on it, as opposed to Rush Limbaugh, and I'm going to purposely say his name, but I have nothing against him, and I never met him. But it's very well known. Even a lot of the people in the media don't like the man, because he's very unfortunate. His words have been very inflammatory, and that's not what you need if you're trying to build a country or a better society. Because again, these people these very people on, and I'm saying this, on Fox News and Rush Limbaugh, these are supposed to be born again, spirit filled, tongue talking, Bible toting, yellow pen marking Christians. And yet, they're advocating knocking down the president, or they don't want to see a government run health program when other countries have it. We're paying for it anyway. Why would you want people to continue to die? That doesn't make sense. And you're supposed to be a Christian.
Krista, but you know, Ricky, it is a shame that those are the things that our society thrive on. And, you know, I have a local cable TV show, and I have done so since 2005 I have the show. And I tell you something, all I do on the show is empowering, offering educational material, but I don't do the garbage on my show and all of that. And you know that the society, when people meet me and they want to give me a compliment, oh, you are the lady with the Christian show.
Uh-huh.
And I said, no, I'm the lady with the personal development show. But then I stop it. I say, I'm not going to apologize for the quality of the information I'm passing on to the general public. And I said, it is a good thing that the way I operate, it sets me apart from the others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so people just buy into all that garbage, and that's what they thrive on. A lot of time people will say something to me, they read in the newspaper and they hear on the TV, and I said, where else did you get your information on?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm honestly and truly not ready to buy that, because I don't know how authentic the source is.
Exactly. And see, that's what we want to do with the fan club. We want to keep things on a positive note. We want to offer people the right avenues. And for instance, on the fan club Blog Talk Radio show, we give people a local and international platform in which to promote those things which are positive and uplifting and developing.
Yes.
And we do it in all areas of entertainment, because if you think about it, entertainment is in everything. There's music, there's soundtracks to everything. And you know, when this idea came to me as I was contemplating starting the fan club 9 years ago, in my prayer time, the Lord said, you know, I said, Lord, what does this relate to? And the Lord gave me a vision right there. He said, what about the Pied Piper? You know, the story about the guy who played the music, and how did he get rid of the rats? They followed him all the way out of town and drowned. He cleared the city by playing music, and they followed him. Well, I saw then how our kids, the wrong type of music, was getting kids to follow it and do the wrong thing. Well, if you have the right type of music or entertainment, just like television, you can get people to do the right thing. And
that's
so
right.
So many,
because they are being programmed anyhow. So why not program them the right way?
Exactly. And why not create a plan, a marketing plan? Here's my vision. Okay, and the vision of all the directors that are working with me. Our vision is to create a program where we force people to succeed. It's open, it's clear, and it builds from the bottom up, because, again, I don't know a house that didn't have a good foundation that stood in a time of pressure. And so that's what we're doing. And so for all those artists out there, people that have books, models, dancer, anybody in any avenue of entertainment, continue to listen to Daphne's show. Okay, you're going to find something, somebody that is doing something that's going to help you, give you wisdom. Also, make sure you come by www.fanclubinternational.com, and our business line is area code 424-785-0556. And someone will get back to you. A lot of times I get an opportunity to call people back. They don't think that I'm going to call them back or think somebody. I get a chance, and sometimes I get a chance to answer the phone, and I'm there.
Oh, I was just going to say that it's not just calling back, because I called one night in the wee hours with the anticipation of leaving you a message, and you answered the phone, and it startled me because I didn't expect you to answer the phone, and especially at that time, and you were so humble in accommodating me and just answering my question, and that was a good thing. Ricky, I don't know how much minutes we have because I'm still working here with the Blog Talk system. It has kicked me off, and so I'm not on my switchboard. So we will just need to continue our conversation until I can get back on my switchboard. So my next question for you is, what can we look forward to from the Fan Club International in the next 24 months?
Okay. What you can look forward to is us actually launching our full-out marketing program, and we're doing this in phases. First, we're building our social site. We're going to be connecting our social site with a number of sister sites so that we can begin, first of all, sharing the people that builds an audience. We have to build an audience. We found that worked real well for Barack Obama. He took advantage of the Internet and created the social site that got the message across, and people were able to see the truth. So first of all, we're building that social network. Next, what we're going to do is we're going to be starting various marketing venues where we will be very simple. Certain things are common knowledge. We have to pull people together and say in groups like seminars, things of that nature. Okay, we will be. You will obviously see us because we're in entertainment, doing various film festivals. We're going to have a extra entertainment extravaganza by. We're looking around September where we can pull all the entities, maybe like 3 days. We'll have auditions, we'll have concerts, because the way we market, and when people go on the Fan Club, they can see a general, overview. I do a general 5-minute overview, and our uniqueness is that, again, we'll do things like free concerts and premieres, where people can actually see it, and then they see what Fan Club's about, and then what we do is we market to those people who want to become entrepreneurs. That's real straightforward. And then there's people who just want to be fans, and they can get entertainment and attend things that are on at a discount. And so these are the things, and this is what's going to help different artists. And now what we're doing is we're pooling our entertainment resources together with artists from all over the world. And so actually what's happening is, as a financial, from the financial aspect, every artist, actor, everybody is benefiting from the efforts of the entire company, which is, if I'm an artist now and I make a record and you're an artist and your fans buy my music today, you wouldn't get anything. But in the Fan Club, and because you're an artist in the Fan Club and I'm an artist in the Fan Club, the way this is set up is that if you have fans that are in your organization that follow you, but they buy my music, guess what, Daphne? You're still getting paid. You're still getting a percentage.
Exactly. It's like keeping keeping the business in the family.
Exactly. And the artists get paid right up at the front. They get paid at the front end of the
They don't have to sell 3 million pieces before.
Mm-mm. No. They get paid right at the beginning. And
wonderful.
You know, what we show people is that we want them to, because we have the legal expertise, Ali Nago and my wife and other people, we have the legal expertise to show them how to create their own, not only their own business, but to create like a living trust out of business, make a business.
Right. So the legacies, if and when they are not around, there's a legacy that's been created that will kind of pass down to their family members, children, wives, whomever.
Right.
Ricky, for that artist, that budding artist who is listening to you from the rural corners of wherever we are in the United States. As a matter of fact, anywhere in the world,
mm-hmm.
because there's talents everywhere.
Right.
How do they connect with the fan club to partner with, to just get, they don't have all the computer access and all of that thing right now. How can they reach you to do that, to get more information about how?
Okay.
How they can
okay. First of all, now they can go to any library and join the fan club, any place where there's a computer. Now what we're doing is we're going to build, I have people interested in India. I have people interested wanting to get ready going right now in other parts of the world. So what we're going to do is we're going to build leaders in various parts of the world. There are people who have these, because remember, if I'm a record label company and I have an artist, it's self-service now. I got
right.
the studio. They can come in the studio. They can do the work. All I have to do is help them get it started. Now I'm earning money and they're doing all the work. I'm helping them build. Now the tendency is for people to help people build. So what they need to do is get in the fan club, get on the list, get their name. And what we're going to do as a collective effort is find and develop leaders, promoters. We've got record companies. We've got people who have their own studios that are just as good as any other major studio anywhere. That people know how
That's
to
right.
do this technology. And so
right.
they can now partner together. Yeah, mm-hmm. you can use my studio. You just, okay, I'm going to get a percentage of the music when you make it. So
right.
I'm going to help you build it. So we're
right.
forcing team efforts. We right now, one of the big things that we're doing right now that's happening with the fan club, because
mm-hmm.
one of the things, we don't want to get investors. So we're going to be a privately run company, okay?
Yes.
We have
mm-hmm.
It's privately run. We're not going public because then you have all this legal responsibility. And that's just a quick way. A lot of times people go public so they can sell shares and something go wrong, they can grab theirs and run. We have no intention of running. So
right.
what we're going to do right now, what we have going on, we've meeting with some investors. We found some locations. We're going to be developing, okay, a number of entertainment centers, malls, food courts, stuff like this. Right now,
mm-hmm.
that's the big thing on the table with us. We have a location we're looking at out here in California that's a very
mm-hmm.
centrally located. It's an abandoned mall. And you're talking about a mall that has, amphitheaters, theaters, shopping centers. But now the key thing is the fans and the artists are making money from this mall. Where else can you go?
Right.
And you get paid for going to a movie.
Shop at your own place.
Yeah, not only shopping, but remember, the way we have this set up is people can ask, because we're going to help them start their own business and train them how
mm-hmm.
to run a business.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're helping our society increase the economy. We're helping
mm-hmm.
people become financially independent, because we've got to show them how to become independent. Then we show them how to be interdependent or interact with one another so that
mm-hmm.
it continues to project or prosper. It forces them to prosper, okay,
mm-hmm.
whereas our society now forces people to go under. And so what we're doing is we're just flipping the script, as you would say. Okay,
mm-hmm.
so we have
mm-hmm.
this actually in the process right now. We have an architect who's painting the rendition. So when we go before the city, now the investors can get what they want. They want property. But we're going to
mm-hmm.
provide them something that they don't have right now, and that's the
mm-hmm.
people that are going
mm-hmm.
to attend it, because now the people are profiting from that. So you can't stop me from getting my money if I need my money.
Mm-hmm.
So
Ricky, just give me a minute. I want to apologize to the people in the chat room and everything, because I'm still having a challenge with the blog talk thing. I can't get the system up. I can't get my switchboard up on anything. So I apologize to the people in the chat room. If you have questions and if people are trying to call in, I am still having a challenge getting things up. So before it kick us off, Ricky, I don't know how much minutes we have. Before it kick us off, I want to show gratitude and appreciation to you for coming on and so generous with your time and your information. And I want to encourage people to become part of the fan club. And I specifically ask that question about people who are in the remote areas.
Yes.
Because I want you to understand that you don't need to be out in LA to be part of this, because somewhere in your neighborhood there is somebody who can help you to get your music together or whatever it is you have together. But you have to go seek, ask questions, and find out who is there to mentor you and to support you in the endeavor that you are looking to begin.
Yes.
And then you can partner with the fan club.
Right.
Okay, we continue a dialogue, Ricky, until it kicks us off.
Okay.
I apologize.
No, that's okay. I want you to know what a humbling honor it is for me. I mean, if someone asks me to do something, I don't take it for granted. Life's too short. And so if I'm asked to be on the show, if I'm thought of if I do anything right, I'm so grateful for it. Because, again, you know, life is short, and you don't know what kind of effect you can have on a person. I just know that I'm responsible for how I affect people. And if I make someone feel bad or not able to help them out, it does affect me. And so I want to do what I can do. Just, again, I want God to be able to say good and faithful servant. But staying with what you said, remember, you know, people are looking to, they're waiting for, if people have the idea they're waiting for their ship to come in, that's the wrong idea. What you need to do is go out and swim to it. So what we're doing we're preparing a ship, and we're going to come out. We're going to find a way. We want to be creative and encourage people to get together, because that's what we're doing. We're creating that's what a social site is for, is to create a social atmosphere and a program that, I understand, people in the entertainment industry must understand, and even including the fans, that this is profitable for everyone, that it's transparent, that it's going to be what we call the entertainment revolution, okay?
Because
I'm 55 years old, and you know what? I can still, if I take 6 months, get in shape, I could still outthrow half the guys out there in the football league. I know I can. So I think we got about 4 minutes.
Okay, so just do your closing thoughts.
Okay. Oh,
I don't even think I'm going to be able to play my closing music, but know
problem.
You all have a destiny to follow, and don't let anybody take you off of that in case I don't get to play my music. So do your closing thoughts, Ricky.
Well, for anybody listening, I want to say this, that at the Fan Club International, what we've created, we know that we have an opportunity that can help people, and we're so grateful for anyone who comes by our website, joins our social site. We're committed to making sure you get exposure, exposing people for what good deeds they have, and we know that people, when they come there, they have plenty of social sites and websites they could go to, but we appreciate them for coming to the Fan Club International. Also, we want to know, let everybody know, that our goal at the Fan Club is to help you not only develop your business entities or exposure for entertainment, but also the things that you need to help build your family. And we give God all the credit for that, and we want you to also, and if you have any questions, feel free to call us, because we truly understand that people don't need an entertainment idol, but that people need an opportunity.
That's right. That's right.
Based on that, our closing thoughts.
So I want to thank you, Ricky. I still want us to continue talking until they kick us off, because I am trying to see if I am able to get back up to play the closing music here.
Okay.
So I don't think with 90 seconds we're going to be able to do that. And I want to thank everyone. I know you all enjoy the music. I enjoy the music too, but I'm not able to do it today because of technical glitches. But the one thing I'm thankful for is that we were able to complete both conversations, and I promise you next time we'll have that. I love each and every one of you. I look forward to seeing you again on the 22nd of July. So long, keep doing God's word, work, and follow your destiny. Thank you, Ricky, for joining us, and I look forward to talking with you in the near future.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. I was trying to see if I could play it physically, but it's not happening either. So, okay, we had a good show, minus the music, but keep following your destiny and you will overcome. I love each and every one of you. And thank you for joining me this morning. Love you guys. Bye, Ricky.